I hope you've had a chance to get out and enjoy some of the sunshine we've had in the last few days. This is Pat, and I'm reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, May the 15th. On the front page, The Solar Project Partly Located in Floodplain by Gordon Woods. During Monday's DeWitt County Land Use Committee meeting, committee member Patrick Ryan said that he discovered the site for the Prairie Flats Solar Energy Project was partly in a floodplain. He asked County Zoning Administrator Elizabeth Weichel how that would affect the developer's application. They'll have to go through the proper permitting for that, Weichel said. There are a couple of ways to get around it. If they avoid it with the panels, they're fine. But if they want the panels in there, I think there are some ways around it. Weichel pointed out the developers weren't erecting any buildings on the site. Weichel said that they could try to get out of the floodplain by applying for a letter of map revision. Otherwise, I think there's another permit they can do with us if they can show the elevation is high enough, Weichel said. She also said often developers scale down their plans between the time that they receive the site approval and when they submit the plans for a building permit. Ryan also mentioned a commercial solar project that at the time of the developer's application, they hadn't decided on what type of screening to use per county ordinance. Is that when they start working with the nearby residents, he asked. Weichel said, because the North Yard Solar Project is located across from a subdivision, developers must erect a screen. There's no wriggle room there, Weichel said, but because there were three properties that are not part of that subdivision, they get to make a decision according to our ordinances on what their screening is to be. She added, a homeowner can accept a payout in lieu of screening. Committee Chairman Buck Carter received clarification from Weichel that if one homeowner decided to accept a payout, but his neighbor did not, would that result in a gap in the screen? Weichel said it would. Carter said that should be addressed in the ordinance. That would create a very strange situation, Carter said. And also from the front page, Civil War Plot Rededication Saturday. A dedication ceremony for the restored Civil War Soldiers Plot in Woodlawn Ceremony is scheduled for 10 a.m. on Saturday. A reception will follow in the Carriage Barn at the C.H. Moore Homestead and DeWitt County Museum, 219 East Woodlawn Street. The DeWitt County Genealogical Society has worked for the past year repairing, strengthening, and cleaning the graves of 80 Civil War veterans buried there. The dedication ceremony will include dedication of new informational sign by Joey Long, the director of the museum, the Bloomington Normal American Legion Color Guard, live vocalists Walt and Linda Hunt Oler, the restoration story presented by Terry Lemmel, president of the Genealogical Society, and a blessing by Pastor Scott Marsh. Parking will be available in the empty lot located at Center and Woodlawn Streets. There will be limited seating and lawn chairs are recommended. The reception at the museum will include lunch and drinks with photos of the restoration project and biographical sketches of the men buried in the soldiers' plot. In case of rain, the entire event will take place in the carriage barn. And finally, from the front page, entrance sought for the July 4th parade. Clinton Celebrates America 250 Committee is accepting entries for the July 4 parade, so that will kick off a full day of activities on Mr. Lincoln Square. With a theme of Let Freedom Ring, entrants are encouraged to show off their patriotic spirit for the city's observance of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. The 10 a.m. parade will line up on West Main Street and march to the corner of West Main and Quincy Street. Entries invited to participate include walkers, vehicles, floats, and equestrian entries. Clinton Celebrates America 250 is a volunteer organization that began planning in the fall for the July 3rd through 5th schedule of entertainment and activities. Clinton Mayor Helen McAlesey and the City Administrator Tony Harris are members of the committee. Parade entry forms are available from organizer Eth Brady Looney at eblooney@hotmail.com or the Vespasian Warner Public Library. Deadline for entry is June the 15th. The full schedule of family-friendly activities, food, and music will open on the square after the parade. Live entertainment includes free concerts on Friday and Saturday nights, and Sunday at noon. An interdenominational church service will be held Sunday morning on the square. In the news, IDFPR launches new online portal for consumer financial complaints. Chicago, the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, IDFPR, today announced the launch of a new online submission option designed to simplify and modernize the way Illinois consumers file complaints against financial institutions and a federal step back in enforcement. For the first time, the portal will accept complaints for both the Division of Banking, DOB, and the Division of Financial Institutions, DFI, creating a unified and more accessible process for residents across the state. Consumer voices help us identify issues early so we can protect Illinois residents, said IDFPR Secretary Mario Trejo, Jr. Modernizing our complaint process with a clear online submission portal strengthens our ability to serve the public. These improvements are especially important as complaints continue to rise nationally and federal resolutions decline. IDFPR is stepping in to meet this moment. Rising complaints highlight the need for modernization. The launch comes amid a significant rise in consumer financial complaints nationwide. According to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, complaints to the CFPB more than doubled from 2.7 million in 2024 to 5.6 million in 2025. At the same time, the CFPB's successful mediation rate dropped sharply from 49% in 2024 to less than 5% by November of 2025. Illinois has followed a similar trend. In 2025, Illinois consumers submitted 244,000 complaints to the CFPB, an increase of more than 120,000 from the previous year. Many of these complaints involve industries regulated by DOB and DFI, including debt collection, money transmitters, and mortgage organizers. Strengthening the oversight, IDFPR's Division of Financial Institution and Banking oversee the wide range of financial entities. DFI regulates credit unions, debt collectors, consumer installment lenders, money transmitters, and enforces the 36% APR cap under the 2021 Predatory Loan Prevention Act. DOB regulates state chartered banks, student loan services, mortgage lenders, and pawnbrokers. By improving the complaint submission process, IDFPR aims to enhance its ability to identify industry issues, support voluntary mediation, and protect consumers in an increasingly complex financial environment. We want to help, said Francisco Menchaca, director of IDFPR's Division of Financial Institutions. If you have an issue with an entity, even if you're not sure if they're regulated by IDFPR, let us know. Consumers can access the updated complaint portal, learn more about the mediation process, and view the full list of regulated industries by visiting IDFPR's complaint webpage. In further news with the obituaries, we have Margaret Helen Lofgren Barnes. Margaret Helen Lofgren Barnes, age 97, of Clinton, passed from this life to her next everlasting life on May the 8th, 2026, at Goldwater Care in Clinton. She will be reunited in heaven with George, her husband of 51 years, who preceded her in death on August the 17th, 2000. Services will be conducted at 2 p.m. on Saturday, May the 16th, 2026, at Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, with the Reverend Paul Stroop and Scott Marsh officiating. Burial will follow at Wilmore Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. on Saturday at the funeral home. Second obituary, Kenny May. Kenny May, 70, of Clinton, passed away at 9:52 p.m. May the 6th, 2026, at his home, leaving behind a legacy of laughter, kindness, deep love for the people and places that meant the most to him. The celebration of Kenny's life will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. on Saturday, June the 6th, 2026, at Kenny May's homestead, which has been in the family since 1855. The family entrusted Calvert Funeral Home of Clinton with cremation rights. Memorials may be directed to DeWitt County, Pheasants Forever. Our final obituary is for Janice Lee Peacock. Janice Lee, Jan or Momo Peacock, 79, of Clinton, formerly of Kenny, passed away with her family by her side at 5:47 p.m. on May the 8th, 2026, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Momo was the happiest, spending time with her family, especially her grandsons. Memorials may be directed to Ruby's Rescue and Retreat at 4035 County Road, 600 North, McLean, Illinois, 61754. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, May the 19th, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Graveside services will be conducted at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, May the 20th, at Pleasant Valley Cemetery in Kenny, with cousin Scott Ketchum officiating. And from the op-ed page, Thank You Readers, the On Point column by Richard Koritz. This is my 400th column for the Clinton Journal. That means you have put up with my musings for more than 8 years with the Clinton Journal. And before that, I wrote a similar column for the DeWitt County Constitution, now defunct. I write because it simply keeps me informed about what is going on locally, statewide, and as a nation. I must admit, I have never taken a journalism class in my life. I have endured a few English seminars, and one of my least liked classes was legal writing in law school. I admit that I have a conservative, Republican leaning, with a dash of libertarian thought thrown in. Add to that a conservative Bible college foundation, and you have a better idea of the nature of the author in this column. Given that background, I readily concede that I am most challenged academically by my liberal and democratic friends, who often take issue with my thoughts. That's okay with me, because I know they have to vent their frustration somewhere. This is an opinion column, and that opinion is mine, by definition. The Clinton Journal has been most kind to me and has never censored an article. I have been asked a few times about my conclusions, but no article has ever been pulled from publication. That reflects a free press, for which I am most grateful and appreciative. As a reader, I encourage you to avail yourself of that free press concept and write a letter to the editor if an issue concerns you. While I seek to provide both sides of many issues, I realize that many may disagree with my conclusion. That is what a free press is all about. Voice your opinion. Recently, this column was very critical of the Shia Islam of Iran and what I view as its radical theocratic control of Iran. A reader sent a note to the Clinton Journal providing another perspective on the issue. While I did not know the historical truths of the note before I read it, I readily confess that it had no bearing on how I wrote the article, since that information was not in my mindset as I wrote the article. That person suggested that we, the United States, should take a deeper look at what has caused the radicalization of Islam in Iran. The author suggested that a world look at Iran was needed for understanding. I found his memo to be enlightening. The memo cited that after World War I, the British basically controlled much of Iran and were rather harsh on local freedoms. The article went on to remind us that the U.S. engineered the coup in Iran, which resulted in the Shah being put into power and again giving voice to his oppressive nature. The oppressed entity in all of this was the Shia Muslims, who simply revolted and kicked the Shah out and put into effect their theocratic form of government. In essence, the comment was to the effect that the oppressed have now become the oppressor. That social-cultural dynamic bears some deep pondering about our world. Christians in Iran today are terribly oppressed, but the church, even if underground, in Iran today is the fastest growth area of Christianity in this world. People do not like to be oppressed, and their natural instinct is to rebel. This nation has not let any one group become the oppressor, and that is its strength. We need to seriously study history, but alas, that is not the priority in today's educational system. Thank you for your readership of this newspaper and the articles herein. Your comments, both negative and positive, are welcome. Your suggestions for articles are also welcome. This paper is to serve the public's desire for knowledge, and you are that public. Your comments are appreciated, whether you agree or disagree with this author. Again, thank you for your readership. Richard Koretz is an Illinois native, attorney, and former DeWitt County State's Attorney. And another column today from the Prairie Doc, Pump Handles and Public Health, by Dr. Jill Cruz. Healthcare is often thought of as something that happens one patient at a time in a clinic or hospital. Public health takes a broader view and is focused on improving the health of entire populations. In 1854, a London physician helped stop a deadly cholera outbreak by removing a simple pump handle. That moment would become one of the earliest and most powerful examples of public health in action. Back then, no one understood how cholera spread. Many believed it was caused by bad air or mysterious environmental forces. They did not know that it was actually caused by a bacterium that was spread through contaminated water sources. Dr. John Snow noticed a pattern. In London's Soho neighborhood, a cluster of cholera cases seemed concentrated around a single public water source, the Broad Street pump. When he mapped where people lived, most of the infections pointed back to that pump. Even those who lived farther away but became ill reported getting their water from the same source. Meanwhile, workers at a nearby brewery who drank beer instead of water were largely spared. The brewing process, alcohol, and acidity of the beer made it difficult for the cholera bacteria or other pathogens to survive. Armed with this evidence, Dr. Snow convinced local officials to remove the pump handle. This cut off public access to the contaminated water. After this happened, the number of new infections quickly declined. That simple act marked the beginning of modern public health, using data, observation, and intervention to stop disease at its source. Today, public health has evolved from reacting to outbreaks to preventing illness before it starts. Public health professionals work behind the scenes to protect and improve the health of communities. To do this, they do this through providing education, guiding policy, and conducting research. They are the unsung heroes of healthcare. When public health works well, it can be almost invisible or easy to ignore. However, when there is a breakdown in public health services, the results can be devastating to a community, and the effects are obvious. Federal, state, and local health departments prepare for emergencies, monitor for disease outbreaks, ensure food safety, and safeguard water quality. They also advocate for health screenings in underserved or high-risk populations. Public health officials work to reduce barriers to care and promote healthier lifestyles for everyone. They may not be removing pump handles anymore, but they are still working every day to protect our water, our food, and our communities. They are helping us all, as we say on the show, to stay healthy out there, people. Dr. Jill Cruz is a hospitalist with the Brookings Health System in Brookings, South Dakota. She serves as one of the Prairie Doc volunteer hosts during its 24th season, providing health education based on science, built on trust. And another from the columns page, Senior Travel Discounts, How to Save on Your Next Trip, by Jim Miller. Dear Savvy Senior, my husband and I are retiring later this year and hope to travel more while we're still healthy and active. Our budget will be tighter, so every dollar counts. Are there worthwhile senior travel discounts you can tell us about, and at what age do they begin? Ready to roam. Dear Ready, retirement is a perfect time to start checking destinations off your wish list. Senior travel discounts can make a real difference. Whether it's airfare, hotels, cruises, train tickets, or attractions, the savings can add up, sometimes hundreds of dollars per trip, if you know where to look and compare. To qualify, you'll need to meet the age requirement, which varies by company. Some start as early as 50, but most don't kick in until 55, 60, 62, or 65. Knowing these benchmarks helps you plan and save as soon as you are eligible. Ways to save. One of the best ways to uncover senior travel deals is through membership organizations. AARP, with membership starting at 50, offers the deepest travel discounts, including savings on hotels, rental cars, cruises, and vacation packages. AAA also provides travel planning services and member savings on lodging and car rentals to adults of any age. Another simple but often overlooked strategy is to ask. Many hotels, tours, and attractions don't advertise senior discounts, but may offer one if you inquire. Keep in mind, though, that the senior rate isn't always the lowest price. Promotional sales, advance purchase fares, and seasonal specials can sometimes be cheaper, so compare before booking. Flexibility is another powerful money-saving tool. Traveling midweek, avoiding peak holidays, or adjusting your date slightly can significantly lower costs. You may also find last-minute deals on cruises, rail trips, and guided tours, especially during slower travel periods when companies are eager to fill unsold space. Here's a rundown of some of the different discount deals currently available. Airlines. Senior airfare discounts are less common than they once were, but some still exist. AARP members can get discounts on select British Airways flights, about $65 off economy and up to $200 off business class. United and Delta may offer limited senior fares, usually for travelers 65 or older, on select routes if booked by phone or using senior search tools. Loyalty programs can also add value through free checked bags or seat upgrades. Trains. excuse me, Amtrak offers about 10% off for travelers 65 plus on many routes, with some cross-border discount starting at $60. Rail passes and multi-city tickets may provide additional savings. Rental cars, AARP members can save up to 30% with companies like Avis and Budget, often with perks like free additional driver and reduced rates on optional coverage. Hertz offers discounts through its 50-plus program. Hotels and lodging. Many hotel brands offer senior or AARP rates, typically 10 to 15% off. Examples include Wyndham Hotels and Resorts, Days Inn, Ramada, Super 8, La Quinta. Best Western Choice Hotels, which are Comfort Inn, Quality Inn, Cambria, and Roadway Inn. Booking directly or through AARP usually ensures the rate. Cruises. Some lines offer discounted fare for travelers 55 plus on select sailings, including Royal Caribbean, Carnival, Norwegian, MSC, and Viking River Cruises. AARP members may receive additional onboard credits through affiliated providers. Off-peak sailings often provide the best value. Restaurants. Many chains offer senior menus, complimentary beverages, or percentage discounts for ages 55 or 60 plus, including Applebee's, Arby's, Burger King, Chili's, Chick-fil-A, Denny's, IHOP, Boston Market, and Cece's Pizza. Participations vary by location. Entertainment and attractions. Museums, theaters, zoos, aquariums, and golf courses often offer reduced admission for seniors 60 or 65 plus. One of the best bargains is the America the Beautiful Senior Pass from the National Park Service for $20 a year or $80 for a lifetime pass available at 62, it provides access to more than 2,000 federal recreation sites. Send your questions or comments to questions@savvyseenior.org. And now there's a little weather history. May the 15th in 1968, during a 55-minute span, six tornadoes moved through DeWitt County. The primary damage zone occurred in the northern part of the county from Waynesville to Farmer City. The most severe damage in Wapella. Four people were killed and 56 injured in the Wapella and Waynesville areas. This outbreak was one of three which moved across central Illinois that day. Besides the tornadoes, a large area of 7 to 10 inches of rain fell in parts of DeWitt, Macon, and Piatt and Champaign counties. In 1991, a flash flood threatened 16 children and 3 adults on a field trip in the Little Grand Canyon in the Shawnee National Forest in southern Illinois. While trying to escape the rising waters, a teacher and 3 children fell into a creek and were swept downstream about a mile. They were later rescued by helicopter. And here is some from the History Almanac. In 1940, nylon stockings went on sale for the first time in the U.S. In 1941, Joe DiMaggio began his historic Major League Baseball hitting streak of 56 games. In 1951, AT&T became the first corporation to have 1 million stockholders. In 1963, the last Project Mercury space flight was launched. In 2014, the National September 11th Memorial Museum was dedicated in New York City. And on those notes, I will leave you for today. Looking forward to being back with you next week. Have a good day. Goodbye.